This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network with another recording of a local public event. I'm Dan Daniels. Bob Wixer, Director of Water and Wastewater Operations for the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority, was in attendance last week to hear neighbors' concerns over smells from the composting facility. Some neighbors have linked health conditions with the smells, including nausea, headaches, sore throats, and asthma. Vice Mayor Kevin Lynch and neighbors from the Belmont-Carlton neighborhood also attended.
Go ahead and get started. I'm Allison Ewing. And is Chris Jensik here?
Yes.
Oh, hey, Chris. Chris is the president of the Belmont-Carlton Neighborhood Association, so representing their interests here. And we have Bob Wixer from the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority. He's come to listen to our concerns and to answer any questions we may have and explain what some of the issues are. On the agenda tonight is first we'll talk about the smells that our neighborhoods deal with from the what we think is coming from the mulching facility at RWSA, and then we'll have and then Chris and Belmont can go to their neighborhood meeting, and we'll then have our regular meeting and open it up for any issues that people may have that they want to bring up. We also will be electing a new leadership for the Neighborhood Association. And then we have an update on some developments that are happening in the neighborhood and some building housing developments. So I guess I just wanted to open it up for, no comments from people about the what they're experiencing with the smells, and I'll go ahead and start it off. We live just down the hill, and actually prior to this year had smelled the pumping station and would occasionally get odors from the mulching facility, but it wasn't, it was very occasional. RWSA, a few years back, a bunch of us went to RWSA and at their board meeting told them about the issues we were having with the pumping station. They were really, really great, turned around, found the funding, and have installed a new facility. So they've really, really been working closely with us, wanting to help solve these issues. So we thank Bob and his staff for coming here and hearing us. But as I was saying, the smell seems to be getting worse and worse, and there are times when I've come home in the evening or stepped out of my door in the morning, and those times seem to be the worst, when there's a temperature inversion. And it'll occasionally, practically knock me over. It's so strong, and I'm like a canary. My throat starts seizing up when I'm around any odors that are too strong or that have some, I think, level of toxicity in them. And that's happened to me, too. So we hope that that this issue can be solved. I understand, I've heard from residents that originally when the mulching facility went in, it wasn't supposed to smell. And obviously the continued growth of the city and the county, because it serves both the city and the county, is such that, that it's no longer, in my mind, something that I feel the neighborhood should have to bear the burden of. So those are my comments. Who else would please come up? And Victoria, do you want to?
Hello.
Can
you do it?
Go. I think Bill, our neighborhood documentarian, would like.
See, for those who didn't make it, we're going to have like a podcast.
Oh, okay. I'm Betsy Rettger, and I don't have any prepared speech. I just thought I would chime in. That we very often in the evening smell it, thick smell, and it's sort of become a joke with anyone that comes to our house and my family that visits, you know, that they come to the stinky neighborhood. So that's all, that it is becoming, it seems to be getting worse, and it definitely happens in the evening, and the morning seems to be the worst. High noon, maybe it burns off or something, but evening to night and then morning.
I have prepared something. And I also have letters here from some of my tenants as well. But, I mean, for the sake of brevity, I don't have to read everything. I'd like to start by thanking the RWSA for their commitment to composting and for being open to hearing our comments this evening. I live in the Marchant Mansion. It was built in 1840 and predates the arrival of the sewage treatment plant by well over 100 years. The odors from the sewage treatment plant are something I've personally experienced for almost 14 years, other residents on the hilltop for much longer. While other odor-related issues have been dealt with in that time, the composting odors have continued to worsen noticeably over the last 8 years or so. The odors don't just waft by on a breeze. More typically, on our hilltop, it's a blast that hits us for a minimum of 15 minutes and quite often lasts an hour or more. This is an almost daily occurrence and typically several times a day. The odors impact our lives on many different levels, only two of which I'll address this evening. One is from a financial standpoint. We have had a tenant move out within 2 days of arrival due to the fetid compost odor that engulfed our property for a straight 24-hour period. Ethically, I had to break her lease. Those are inhumane conditions to expect someone to live under. Prospective tenants tend to view apartments in the early evening around dinner time. That is when the fecal odor is usually at its worst. The odor has become so bad there's no way that it can be explained to prospective tenants as an occasional thing. This is affecting our ability to earn rental income. I honestly don't know if any of my current tenants can stick it out another year under these conditions, and who could blame them. As the population of the county increases, so will the amount of biosolids that will be composted. The resulting odors will render the hilltop uninhabitable. On a personal standard of living level, the situation is harmful and demoralizing. When the odors last for more than 10 minutes, they fill the inside of our house and cause headaches, burning eyes, and nausea. It's the first thing that greets us when we come home from work. We can't have barbecues. We have a yard, yet it can't be enjoyed. We can't keep our windows open for more than a brief period of time. We've frequently been awakened in the middle of the night by the smell. While composting biosolids is a great idea from an environmental standpoint, the RWSA needs to be sensitive to the fact that they are composting fecal matter next to a residential neighborhood and find an appropriate solution, preferably enclosing the yard and installing the proper filtration. Thank you.
I just want to thank you very much for saying all that. Are you from RWSA? Thank you for coming. Thank you, Bill, for that great email you sent out today with a lot of facts and pictures. And I was shocked once the other filter was replaced to still have so much odor in this neighborhood. And, of course, it's a whole lot worse in the summer when the humidity sets in. I can't go out in my yard. I can't open my windows. And I can't imagine what's in the air that's affecting us on our physical health level. So, and as Bill pointed out, I'm sure if this was happening next to Farmington, it wouldn't be an issue. So, I live on Chesapeake, 3 blocks down, 1419. Anyway, so anything you can do to help us out would be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Chris Kensick with Belmont Carlton neighborhood, and I only catch odors about once a week, maybe, depending on which way the wind blows. I live by the Clark Elementary School. I'm sure the Carlton half of the neighborhood probably experiences it more often. So I'm here to see if there are any plans to do improvements. I didn't realize it was the composting yard. I assumed it was just the treatment plant itself, which I see is undergoing some kind of upgrade right now. But I guess we have some limited power with city council, so if there's anything that we could do to request, I know council runs the authority budget with the county, so if there's something the neighborhoods could request the city to keep this in mind at budget time or something, let us know maybe how we can help the authority come to conclusion. Yeah, I'd be curious to hear if there's science behind enclosing it or piping out the gases.
I'm Vivian Jones Schmidt, and I live on Chestnut Street right behind Seaville Market, so Carlton neighborhood. And thank you for coming. Thank you all for organizing this, whoever did it. I've personally been waiting almost 19 years for this to happen because the odor has been a problem since we moved in to our house. We didn't know about it before we moved in, so it was a surprise. I know that several years ago, City Council took up this issue, and we were told that, as well as I can remember it, the treatment process that had been planned was originally planned as a three-part process, and that they ran out of money, so they only installed two parts. And that's why we had this odor. Now, this is what I remember. So, whereas up until that point, the odor had assaulted us during the day, a few weeks after that announcement was made, the timing switched, and now it was waking me up choking in the night, somewhere between 10 o'clock and midnight, and that's what's been happening ever since. I didn't know anything about a composting situation. To me, it's the same odor, it's the same noxious, choking, thick quality of the air. And it comes in the winter. It comes through triple track storm windows. In the summer, we have to close our windows because you simply can't breathe. I have talked with, I don't know if Jerry Fisher is still the chair of the RWSA. I talked to him at one point when he was. I really feel like I was toyed with. I feel like I was put off and disrespected. And so I don't know what can be done about this situation, but what I really hope for is that we can find a solution, and I also hope that it's done in a respectful way. You know, I mean, you know, we're not stupid. We're not fools. So I really would like to have a good quality conversation about it, and I'd like for it to go away for real.
I'm Lucy Cock, and I live across the street in a very old house. It is not a sealed building, but when it smells bad outside, I go inside and shut the door. Since I was, this problem existed before I came here. I've been here only 6 years, and I presumed that because I was eager to live in Woolen Mill and didn't ask enough questions, that I had no right to complain or seek remedy. However, I've given serious thought to leaving this area because after coming here, and never before, I've developed a rather serious case of asthma. But I didn't blame it on this composting place because, frankly, I did not realize what went on over there off the roadway. It looked like a driveway. I didn't have any business going down, and so I never have been down there. But I do know where the sign on the roadway is, so I presume that's where the offense comes from. However, I believe I remember that, is it one of the nearby counties, Green County or such, that there's big debate over whether biosolid compost is good or not good for agricultural use, and that is debated in county government, in whichever county that was. My questions are several, and I will give you the questions. I'm not sure that I, at this moment, have any expectation of an answer now, but maybe sometime. If this is a particulate that that we are inhaling, or only a gas that we are inhaling, and is there some science as to its unquestioned adverse effect on us, or is there no such science for either the particulate or the gaseous, obnoxious but gaseous odor? And I'm wondering what in the world becomes of this compost. Can I go get some and use it on my flower garden? I really think that'd be nice, but nobody's ever invited me to use it. Ought to be some advantage to this dilemma. I also, since I've been in my house, replaced all the windows in some effort to solve the problem my own personal self. I think I've taken all the personal remedies I know of, other than moving. But the last question I have, which is related to my asthma and not related to the smell, is what anybody can tell me about the nature of the dust in the air, which cannot possibly be coming from the sewage treatment plant, but rather I think comes from the rock quarry across and downriver, or from the cement plant coming in from the other direction. The dust I speak of is gritty and white, and has brought me to the conclusion that this is the air in this place where my house is now is the dirtiest I've ever experienced in any place other than Eastern Kentucky, where the offender was the dust of from the coal mines, which settled all over your, you know, it was the kind of place you couldn't hang your washout. And I don't hang washout now. I don't know what would happen. But I know that in Kentucky, if you hung washout, it would all turn black, and you didn't. But if you hung your washout here, I'm satisfied, it would all turn gritty gray, which I don't guess is the compost. So those are my questions.
Hi, I'm Michael Lasko. Thank you again for coming. I live all the way at the end of Market Street, so I'm probably about as close to the point zero as you can get. I think everyone here is kind of making the point, and I hope I don't have to go into more of why we all feel that it's getting worse, anecdotal evidence that it's getting worse. What I'd like to have you speak to tonight is how the amount of compost has grown over the years. That might actually be related to why we're feeling it more often, and what the rationale was for setting the facility up, composting, what the rationale was for setting it in that location, and what the rationale is for keeping it in that location.
I've got sort of a very short prepared statement. What's that? I'm sorry, yeah. Dear neighbors, at the dawn of the 20th century, there was no city water, gas, and sewer in the Woolen Mills Village. People had wells they heated with wood, coal, or fuel oil. And they had what they called Johnny houses, outhouses, one and two holers, located in their backyards. At the dawn of the 20th century, 40 years after the establishment of the Charlottesville Woolen Mill by Henry Clay Marchant, there was no Rivanna Water and Sewer Authority. At that time, the city of Charlottesville had a straight pipe which ran to the Rivanna River. Presumably, the effluent received little treatment, and it was dumped into the Rivanna with the classic comments like, "Flush hard, Richmond needs the drinking water." Today, following the annexation of the woolen mills into the city of Charlottesville, we have most of the modern conveniences. We got running water. We got indoor plumbing. Yes, sir. Actually, we had electricity very early. That's another story. The city of Charlottesville and the county of Albemarle have a first-class outfit with RWSA. They really do a good job. But, of course, in the woolen mills, there is one paradox that has arisen from the modernization, from the arrival of the 21st century. We have taken our Johnny houses down. RSA, our neighbor to the east and south, has built the mother of all Johnny houses on a hill atop the south banks of the Rivanna River and Morse Creek, opposite the woolen mills buildings. It's an admirable proposition. Dewatered sewage sludge is mixed with wood chips and lime, then composted via a biological process until all the pathogens in the sludge are dead. One problem, it all happens in an open building next to a populated area. And yet one thing, Lucy, I wonder whether the dust could be the lime that's added into the... Just a possibility. Right color, anyway. It is time to close the outhouse door. We support the composting program, but we further support containing the smell. While we can't and don't want to spread this noxious odor all around, we can contain the odor through the joint effort of all RWSA users, like a surtax that would be applied to people all over the county that are sending their excrement to our neighborhood. This malodorous exploitation of the woolen mills wouldn't stand if it were in Farmington or Fifeville. Thank you.
Is this the only plant?
That's a question for Bob. I think so.
I'm jotting down people's questions, so we'll sort of put.
I just figured I'd sort of beat a dead horse up here because I live right next door, and I think that we do probably get the worst of it down here as it rolls over the hill. Not as bad as up on top of the hill, but and I've been down here for quite a while, and it used to be sort of a handful of nights you would sort of smell it, and it was not nearly as bad as what had just gotten fixed, so it was very tolerable. And it just continues to get worse and worse, and now it's 3 times a week in the morning and 4 times a week at night, and you don't want to eat outside because everything tastes like the sewer, and I mean it's pretty disgusting. And the worst part of it is, real recently, I'm sure a number of you had the same experience I did, where I opened my new tax assessment and went, because my property taxes keep going up, and despite the fact that we're dealing with this, our real estate taxes go up and up and up and up and up, and the city doesn't seem to recognize that. That there's an impact on the quality of life here because of this. I mean, how can we continue to have our taxes go up by 20 and 25% per year and still not have anything done and have this sort of deterioration within our neighborhood? It seems to me that we ought to be, with tax assessments going up the way that they are, that we ought to be able to deal with something like this. There ought to be money available to do this. The RWSA was very successful when they really set their minds to doing the sewage treatment plant, the pumping station here. It was an amazing turnaround. So I'm sure that there is something that can happen, and I'm sure that you would find the support within this neighborhood to help that go through City Council.
My name is Carl Ackerman. I live at 1611 East Market Street, which is right where Franklin Street comes. And I, too, would like to thank you. And also, I see our Vice Mayor, Kevin Lynch, in the back. Thank you for coming out tonight. I'd like to compliment RWSA, and this, I think, relates to the filter. I mean, there are some smells that are no longer here, which is actually, I would like to view as a positive sign that we can come to a point where we remove further smells. When we first moved to the Woolen Mills 13 years ago, and shortly after we arrived, our children were born, there was one night, and as far as I can understand, it was some kind of a burp of chlorine that got us out of bed, put the kids in the car. I thought a train had derailed with chlorine. It was so strong coming in. And what I understood that was somehow related to the purification process, and you know, the chlorine didn't dissipate and it all erupted, and so, you know, that thankfully has never happened again. But like the rest of the neighbors, the smell is crushing, and particularly at some times of year. And for a while I was calling Mr. Westcott regularly, to the point that, you know, around my house when it smells, my daughters say, "Dad, call your friend." And what he told me was that it, you know, the science of it was sort of understood, to the extent that October and May there were inversions, there were particularly bad times of year. So I think all of this probably needs to be brought to the problem as we phase it out. I mean, ultimately, in the same way that the city's not pouring its sewage into the stream, I suspect in 50 years we're not going to be we're not going to have a cement plant on our heels. We're not going to have that right there. So as we march toward the future, I think that we need to think of, you know, maybe there are times of years right now that we should, you know, start talking about not doing this, because we know the smell is going to be worse with those kind of atmospheric conditions. Thank you.
My name's Allison Johns. I live on the far end of Chesapeake. And I didn't come here prepared to say anything about this, but I thought I should give my viewpoint, and I hope no one throws eggs at me or little bags of mulch, but I find no problem at all. And I thought maybe I should stand up because maybe it has to do with where I live, and that can give you an idea of where the smell is going. Perhaps it's because I'm at the bottom of the hill. I will say that I've been here 8 years now this month. I will say that we used to smell something maybe 5 times a year, not bad enough to complain about. But I've not smelled it at all in the last 2 years since I got better fitting windows in my house. I don't know if that has to do with it. We live outside a lot at my house. We eat on the porch all year round, and we play in the yard, and truthfully, I don't notice any problem. I was really shocked here to hear all of these stories tonight. So maybe that just helps you to tell where it's going, where it's, you know, if I maybe because my house is lower and kind of a little gully there, maybe. But I just thought that was fair to say.
Hello, my name is Betty Amos. Thank you again for everyone being here. I live across the side street from Ruth, and I'm experiencing the same problems with the odor, and I have particular reactions to all that smell, which makes me ill. And I've been here, I've been here since 46, so I know when I was dusting and I was a little girl, I didn't have this much brown powder on my furniture every other day or so. So thank you. I hope that I wanted to mention one other thing. I'm under the impression that there may be a little bit of a surplus in the budget at this time, and we're in budget time right now. The budget documents, I assume, are either already available for folks to look at, or will be soon, hopefully, and count. I think there are 2 council meetings in which folks can address their particular requests. And I did hear Councillor Kendra Hamilton mention that she would recommend that the surplus be used for infrastructure improvement or repair. And this would certainly, because the whole city and other areas are impacting our area, it appears to me that it would be not only the equitable thing, but the rational thing to use some of that budget if there is a surplus, or not to complete if there was a third step that wasn't completed initially, then at least to conclude that step. Thank you.
Is there anybody else who would like to? Okay. Let's move to questions. I guess the first question was is it a particulate or a gas that we're smelling? You're in the hot seat.
No, maybe not. I'm Bob Wixer with Ravana. Good evening, everybody, and thanks for having me. And seriously, I heard everything that was said. And I'm listening keenly. We take this very serious. And as professional wastewater treatment individuals, our goal is to be able to treat the wastewater using the best technologies with the best methodology that we have. Most of the fellows and gals that work for me have been in the, I've been in the wastewater field for 30 years, and most of the fellows and gals that work for me have been in the field for 20 to 40 years. So we've been in it a long time. I've worked all over the nation in consulting on wastewater issues, and certainly we hear you clearly tonight. A little history on the plant and the composting, and we've heard a little bit about mulch. It's not mulch, it's compost. And in waste treatment, in the wastewater treatment over at Morris Creek Wastewater Treatment Plant, there's two processes, really. There's the liquid process of treating the wastewater, and as part of the treatment of the liquid side, solids are generated. So there's an underflow, which we call, and that's the solids process that also has to be managed and treated. The plan, as you know, or maybe you don't know, was federally funded back in the early 80s, and it was funded in such a way to replace the City of Charlottesville old primary treatment plant. What we have sitting at Morris Creek is what's called a secondary activated sludge plant. It takes wastewater in that's fairly high in organics and treats it to an extremely high level of treatment. We have a federal permit that's controlled by the Virginia Department of Environmental Quality, and the plant has to meet certain chemical and biological parameters each and every day of the year. So we're under very strict controls when we treat the wastewater of the effluent that we put out to Morris Creek and eventually to the Ravana River. The plant being built in the early 80s, the compost facility was actually designed and built in right about 1984. Now, the justification or the basis of why the compost facility was sited where it is, I don't have that information. I started with Ravana in 2003. I would assume the justification was probably a cost-benefit analysis that the engineers ran. They looked at the existing land available, the transportation cost of taking these solids that are produced in the, on the liquid end and having to transport it somewhere. So the land was readily available, and it just made good sense to do it at that site. And that's all I can assume. You know, I don't have the technical studies or the cost-benefit studies that probably were done back in that era.
I'm sorry for your argument, but what is your position?
I'm director of water and wastewater operations, so I'm responsible for the five water treatment plants, the production, the quality of the drinking water. I'm responsible for all of our wastewater facilities and meeting the permits, the compliance of those plants, both federal and state laws. I am also responsible for operation and maintenance on the reservoir systems and the dams. A little background, if you'd like a little background on me, would that help?
Yeah.
No? Okay.
I
report to our executive director, Tom Frederick. As I stated, I've been in the field about 30 years. I started my career out of graduate school with the United States Environmental Protection Agency. And so I go way back in the environmental field and protection of the environment. I've studied major streams and rivers and ecosystems throughout the United States. And the overall goal of protecting the environment is something that's been with me since I've been very young. Ma'am?
So you said you've done consulting throughout the country. Have you seen a situation like this before?
I have been in plants where the city of Richmond, wastewater treatment plant, during certain weather events, meteorological events, and process upset events, I have been there when there have been certain community stakeholders that have been somewhat upset with odor issues. Yes. I'm thinking in other plants that I've been involved with in Wisconsin, pulp and paper mill plants that treat pulp and paper mill waste. There have been some issues there also with neighborhoods, with odors.
So not a particular sewage composting plant? And if so, I'm just wondering what the remedy was.
Right. If you look at the composting facilities in this country, it's really something that is sustainable and good for the environment. If you look at say 1995 era, I think there were approximately 66 composting facilities in the nation, and I believe by the year 1999 there were 166. So it's something that when we think about how do you recycle this source of nutrients back to the environment, this is probably one of the most sustainable, ecological friendly processes that can be done. Yeah, and we can chat a little bit about air quality, and
that's my main concern.
We can chat a little bit about that. A little more finishing up my background. I have a PhD in environmental policy that was granted to me in 2003. So I go way back in the field, and both academia and research, and in federal and state regulatory agencies, in operations. Specific questions? You know, you can raise your hand and I'll try to answer.
The air quality is certainly one that, I mean, anecdotally, we hear people who are, you know, get nauseous and sore throats and headaches. And I did a little web research and read that there were other cities around the country where people who are living next to these biosolid treatment plants were also complaining of health problems. So, I guess we feel like there is a link.
Well, we can talk about biosolids. The disposal of the biosolids that are generated in plants, there's a number of things you can do to dispose of biosolids. You can incinerate them. You can burn them. And then, of course, what happens is you're sinking some of that byproduct material that's burnt into the air, and the ash that's generated from incineration has to go to a landfill. You can landfill biosolids. What you're doing then is you're filling up your landfills with biosolids. It can be used as daily cover in some areas. You can land apply, and I think I heard land application. In Virginia, land application was very controversial, particularly in the 2003 General Assembly. There was a case in Amelia County where they actually went all the way to the Virginia Supreme Court about the right to apply biosolids in farmers' fields. You can compost biosolids. So there's a number of different processes that can be used for disposal. When I grew up along the oceans on the East Coast, they were actually ocean disposing of biosolids, taking it in barges and dumping it out at sea. But that's really not cycling it back into the environment. When you think of taking a material, biosolids, that is composted, and it's rich in phosphorus and nitrogen and carbon, and by putting it back on the land, it's the perfect recycling mode to go with.
I don't think we have an issue with the composting, and we've all said we support them, but
right.
We have an issue with it is it's done in the open next to a neighborhood, and
right.
That the smell and the particulates.
What I'm thinking is that what we have here is a benefit to RWSA, and that they don't have to truck through many hundreds of thousands of cubic yards of organic matter. How much of it actually goes back out into the community? I would suspect it's going to be a fairly small percentage. But essentially, it saves a lot of transportation costs for RWSA at our expense, while under the cover of it's a community benefit.
Well, we can chat a little bit about that. The proposed 0607 O&M operation and maintenance costs on the facility is going to be approximately about $275,000 to run the compost operations. 100% of what we generate goes out and is sold. In fact, last spring we sold out. So it's in our... It's generally utilized by landscapers in both the Central Virginia area, Charlottesville area, Culpeper area, Leesburg area. We have large trucks that come down from the northwestern Virginia area, and they buy, they'll take the compost back up, and they'll use them in along apartment buildings and complexes that are being built.
Do they buy them actually at the plant here, or do they?
It's actually everything is sold at our facility. Now, as I was saying, that was the gross. The actual net after sales to operate that facility, we expect it to be about $145,000 next year. So there is a cost savings to both the city and Albemarle County by the 100% sale of that compost material. We're keeping, which in turn affects rates, of course.
So it's a net cost after.
Correct.
And what is the ratio of compost?
Excuse me?
What is the ratio?
Per cubic yard, I'm thinking it's about $14.
Is that a tremendous benefit for these large-scale users?
Well, I think they weigh a couple things. The one thing with the compost is the nutritive value. What we have found is when it's applied to lawns or applied to certain type of agricultural areas, it's extremely effective. In fact, some of our employees use it in place of artificial fertilizer, and they tell me that virtually no weed growth, dandelions or any type of chickweed or anything. The grass is extremely blue-green in color, indicating that it's not only getting its nutrients, but organic nitrogen and phosphorus. So.
Have you ever seen one of these put indoors, and do you think that would be tremendously expensive to do so?
I'm presently looking at that. I have an engineering group coming in this week. They've been tasked with looking at giving me some engineer estimates, order of magnitude estimates on enclosing the facility. Can it be enclosed? The type of enclosure structurally, the type of lighting that would go inside, and the type of scrubbing to scrub everything from inside the facility. I would expect it would be fairly costly. Sir?
I'll answer my question, I guess. My basic question is, what would it take to end the smell?
Well, one thing we have to talk about is smell in itself. Smell is something that everyone smells a little bit differently. I probably smell pizza, and my wife smells a pizza. She smells different things. So first of all, the sense of smell is a psychophysical, biochemical event.
I invite you to come to my house and tell me whether you smell the same thing that I do.
Okay.
Well, may I skip to that? I actually know something about that. If you study the genetics in a population of a high school biology class, and you pass around for demonstration purposes the smell little sheet strips of paper, or the tasting little strips of paper, some people will and some people won't. Same like boxwood. But the fact is that if you're genetically inclined to smell it, it smells really bad. And if you're genetically inclined not to smell it at all, it doesn't bother you in the least. That is a fact.
Still in the air.
Well, that is in the air as a gas or in the air as a particle.
It's still going to affect you.
Well, it might affect you and not ever be smelled by you. That might be true. I can't say.
But I haven't met anyone yet that doesn't find the odor offensive. Though. That's the problem. Nobody says.
No, we got one person here tonight who said.
No one's ever been to my property. No one has ever been.
But I think that might tell us something about distance too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think it. I mean, it clearly is not as bad in my house on Franklin Street as it is here, and further down in Chesapeake, there aren't people from that neighborhood.
They live up on
Chestnut Street.
Yeah, and I have
Carlton.
I know, but I think that may tell us something about prevailing winds too, in the way that it's brought.
But I think the point is, if there is a bad smell that's alienating a number of citizens, needs to be ended, whether it's up to the city council, the county, or your agency, or whatever.
Lord knows we're not going to be able to control the wind, so right. I think we can control the composting, but we can't control the wind, or the allergens.
Yeah, I agree.
We're not going to move my house. So
some people smell some things, and some smell
I think it's safe to say that the people that don't smell it probably aren't here.
Yeah. Well, and furthermore, to get people to come up to a meeting, I mean, it's I mean, you sit in a meeting on the city and the school budget, and there are 35 people there. This is a pretty good turnout.
Everybody here can probably smell.
I understand that you have a board, and you're responsible to the city and the county, and you can't make all these decisions and commitments and so forth. So I guess what I'm asking you is, what do we need to do to talk to our city councilors, etc.
Well, what our charge is, number one, is to operate that plant to the best of the ability with the tools we have. Secondly, I think what's important is that you are all talking, we're listening, you have a representative here. I think that's real important. What we intend to do is, we're looking at it, our responsibility is to be able to look at it technically, to present options to our board, the Ravenna board, to brief them clearly on what options are available versus the cost, and then answer questions, and they need to make the decision and go forward and tell us really what to do. Did that answer your question, sir?
Yeah.
Okay.
That'd be
very useful to have that information for the public, because if there's any way that can influence that board, it'd be the public.
Well, I hope to have a report along with Tom Frederick, our executive director. We're writing it as we speak at this upcoming March board meeting on the 27th. So.
Can you speak to the science of the monitoring? For example, is there some kind of standard somebody would be breaking the law if there was a certain amount of particulates or if an odor, is there some law or is there some rule of thumb that beyond the subjective stinks or doesn't stink, legally speaking, there's a problem? Have we crossed that threshold? Is somebody looking at that issue? Or are they taking samples?
Well, air sampling is fairly sophisticated, particularly when it comes to odors. You use very advanced analytical equipment such as gas chromatography or mass spectrometry. And as I say, each individual senses things a little bit differently. I'm not a lawyer, but under the Clean Air Act and also the Virginia Administrative the Air Acts in Virginia, the Air Act in particular, as far as I know, odor is classified more as a nuisance. There isn't a set numerical standard that says if you're over 10, you're out of compliance. With odor, it doesn't work that way. Because again, what you might sense a 10 might be a 12 to me and might be a 2 to Victoria. So everybody senses it a little differently.
My gut feeling is that, and I don't have technical information on this, but Ravana's tried very hard to be a good neighbor. They have tried different type of chemicals added to the biosolids. They have used different masking agents to try to mask the odor. They have just recently, I brought in a consultant nationally recognized in 2004. He spent a few days with all of my staff, all of my operators, to make sure they understand how to operate their processes effectively to control and prevent the generation of odors. So they spent, each one of my fellows spent a few hours with this consultant, and he inspected the compost yard and the plant facility and made recommendations to us that we've adopted. So we take it very seriously.
Well, were these questions asked when Allison and everyone was talking about the pumping station odors? Was the question even brought up about the physiology of odors, and are they really smelling it that much, or what? Didn't you take it at face value?
Well, I kind of inherited the Ravana Pump Station project, Victoria. When I started here, the executive director just said, here's a project. And so I ran that through conceptualization, design, and construction to the end. And that's a very small system over there, and we spent close to $250,000 in doing that project. Yeah, just for that project. So
we do appreciate your effort.
Absolutely.
There are some people in the back. Annie,
where's the thing? You can smell it coming in.
Oh, you can smell right now? My question was, I think, you know, there's the smells issue, but some people have also expressed some possible health concerns, and we've mentioned particulate matter or dust or what might be in the air. Could you tell us whether, from your studies, you think that what people are talking about is coming from there? And are there some particles that are leaving the composting station?
We haven't conducted technical studies to determine if it's volatile or particulate matters coming off, but from my knowledge, what would be coming off the compost operation would be primarily volatile, non-particulate. Health issues in biosolids has been around an awful long time, and again, each individual reacts differently, much like odor. The one thing I can say, the literature clearly shows that employees that work with wastewater every day are some of the healthiest employees around. We've looked at them for exposure to viruses, to protozoan cyst, to bacterial agent pathogens, and they almost quite possibly build up an immunity. The immunological system becomes more resistant, so they're usually a pretty healthy group.
So you're saying that you don't think that, you know, Bill had suggested maybe the line.
I don't. Well, let's talk about that, because the lime is mixed into the liquid material before it becomes solid, so it's well incorporated in. My best professional judgment would be there would be no particulate release of lime at all. Once the lime is reacted with the liquid sludge, it combines chemically. Essentially what we're doing is we're taking a lime substance, we're hydrating it, putting it into a liquid form, and then reacting it with the solids. And the reason we use lime is because the way we do water the solids is using a belt press, and the lime helps the solids release from the press mechanism. So it's a chemical reaction. The lime goes through, the calcium carbonate goes through, and then so I'm saying it's once it's solubilized and reacted, the particulate matter in the lime form doesn't exist anymore.
I hear what you're saying about you're having some people come in and look, and we really appreciate, you know, that you've made the commitment to have some folks come and give you some advice and look at the structures and how this might be addressed. And the comment I made when I think we were looking at the pumping station too is that I would encourage you to look, and I assume that you're doing this, but just for the record, we've noticed the problem getting worse over time, and so
knowing how this work, and it's going to take several years, and you know this is all going to be a big hoopla with studies and this and that thing. That the plan is not for today. The plan is for when this actually happens, which is probably going to be, you know, 5 years down the road, 7 years down the road, whatever it takes to get this to happen. And at that point, if Charlottesville continues to grow at the point, the rate that it's growing right now, the problem is going to be on a different scale than it is right now. So I would just encourage you to look as we do this, not towards the moment, but towards the future. And also, consider the moment. And is there anything that we can do in the short term, whether it's planting trees to stop the breezes that come through here, or is it a temporary fix? Is there something that we can do in the short term that may not require us jumping through 100,000 hoops and getting, you know, DEQ to stand on their head to get it to happen? Because it is a real issue for us on a day-to-day basis. First thing in the morning, coffee in hand, walk out the door, kaboom. So I just want to make sure that we're putting our resources, financial and time, into a long-term solve of this problem. Because I don't think it's going to get any better. You know, we're not going to have less waste as we move forward.
I'm not sure if you want to answer.
No, I think that's a very good comment. Very good.
There's an angle that you may not be able to speak to, so certainly say so. There are at least four structures in the affected area that are on the National Historic Register, and certainly the odor has an impact on these structures. And I wonder if there's any leverage there in terms of additional arguments for proceeding in that they are obviously impacting historic structures.
I have no knowledge on that. That's out of my area of expertise, so I would refrain from commenting on that one. Sorry.
Well, you know, I guess my comment with the lime was obviously wrong, but you know, I've got a 2-cubic-foot box of the compost that's out the door there that we could bring in the room, and we would very quickly all smell it, even though it's the finished product. I'm just wondering about the friability of it. I mean, generally with those big front-end loaders, taking that stuff and dumping it in piles, are you saying that there's no dust, there's no particulate that's blowing around the neighborhood, or?
Not just in the piles, too, if all of it's being loaded and being sold.
Right, I mean, every time it's moved and touched. I mean, of course, they did minimize the moving and touching by having this perforated pipe air system, but still, I think there's a lot of dust that's
huge
generated.
Yeah,
I mean, the workers are healthy down there, but you know, the cabs of the equipment that they drive, or you know, the air is filtered, whereas you know, our air didn't filter.
I wonder whether some of those technical equipment couldn't be put in somebody's yard to see if, in fact, there is particulate matter from finished product that is flowing through, which may. I mean, the other thing that it does, I notice, is that if you use some of the mulch and it rains, you can smell. You know, you can kind of smell it again. So I wonder whether your yard is full of fine particulate matter, so that.
Well, you know, I wonder if that happened to be over at that Luck Stone Quarry place and watched the trucks leaving, and that there was this huge cloud. I mean, these are trucks carrying crushed gravel, I think. There was this huge cloud of gray dust in the air above those trucks, like two or three times the height of a truck, that was still concentrated enough that you could see this cloud. And I immediately thought, and it's going right over to my house. Now, in Kentucky, they would have had all of those trucks pass under sprinklers of water, so there would have been no dust. And I thought, wonder if this is really something that could be addressed. But, you know, I don't know where the dust on my front porch does come from. I just know that it's there and what color it is. But I do know that because I live so close to the river, it
The air currents change between night and day.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have expected, in a long ago life, I was a science teacher, but I wouldn't have expected that small river to have that much effect as it does on my front porch air currents. But when across the street, my neighbor once sent landscaping people to spray Roundup, and I happened to be outside, I was completely convinced by that experience that that small river has a tremendous effect on the air currents in my front yard. But that rock quarry is just on the other side of the river, and I think I'd like to know where that dust comes from before I bring it on you.
I think that's the question. I mean, it's certainly one could put a particulate sampler at different areas of the community. The problem is then how do you differentiate the sample? How do you break that sample down into is it inorganic, is it organic? And there are tests that can be run, but again, that gets expensive. And then once you determine is it inorganic and or organic, then where do you assign the source to? Then you've got to go back to the different sources and sample them and compare what's found chemically.
Yes, that is exactly true, and that can exactly be done.
Mm-hmm.
And better to pay for and do that than all of the targets dodging and ducking and we never know what you do the real which target to go after in a more assertive civic effort.
If I could just, there's a lot of discussion about the particulates and the potential health concerns, and I hope as you're pursuing your course of solutions, that would be a consideration as well. But that's what I think we may be struggling with is that health concerns are a real tangible effect. What's not so tangible and hard to maybe convince people of who live at the other end of the Chesapeake of the what a nuisance it is and how it affects our quality of life. That's a little bit harder to quantify. But it's really, really important as well. Certainly the psychological effects that, I've certainly read in the past can impact your health too. So I guess we should probably take a couple more comments and then let Bob go home. John?
Just a follow-up to Laura's question about the quantity of the biosolids going through the plants. Can you tell us what has been the increase over, say, the last 10 years and what's projected going forward?
The biosolids have increased over the last 10 years, and of course as you treat more wastewater you're going to generate more biosolids. It's kind of interesting, Virginia over the last 6 years has really been addressing nutrients, both nitrogen and phosphorus, in its rivers and in the Chesapeake Bay. And just this November, we finally negotiated where the major wig in the Commonwealth, all 125, will come under a certain nutrient waste load allocation, including the Morse Creek plant. So as we go forward over the next 4 to 5 years, this plant is going to be upgraded at a considerable cost to remove quite a lot of total nitrogen and total phosphorus. We're going to have to meet certain levels, for instance, 6 milligrams per liter and 0.5 milligrams per liter for phosphorus and 6 for nitrogen. As we remove nitrogen and phosphorus, we will be generating more solids. But you have to look at it and say, well, we're taking nutrients out and protecting the Ravana and the James and the Bay, and in turn, potentially generating more biosolids and then sinking them elsewhere. sinking them elsewhere. So it's, you know, in the environmental field, environmental engineering, there's no easy solution. You might treat one area, but then you produce something else that has to be disposed in another. So you just want to make sure that final sink that goes to, that it doesn't harm the environment and is really beneficial.
Do you know, though, from when in the 70s the plant was first built versus now, the quantities, the escalation of quantities that you...
I don't have those numbers, Allison, at the tip of my mind, but presently we've rough guessed it at about 8,000 wet tons for 06-07. That's wet tons, that's not dry tons now.
And then what was it 10 years ago?
I don't have that information.
Do you have a projection for the next 5 years? 5 years from now?
We are working on what's known as a interim optimization plan and a preliminary engineering study right now for the nutrient upgrade work. And that will indicate how much additional solids we're going to be producing. Biosolids.
Just one last follow-up. Are there, with new development, the city, there's a little bit of development going on, but are there new developments in the county that are tapping into the sewer treatment lines, and how does that affect the total silence?
Well, each household, if you think about water use, we're probably looking at per capita of about anywhere from 75 to 85 gallons per day per capita. So when you shower, or whether you use your garbage disposal or dishwasher or flush your toilets or bathe, that water has to go somewhere and be treated. That water that you put into the city's collection system and the service authority's collection system contains organic compounds that have to be removed before they go out to the streams and rivers. So as more individuals, as the community grows, so does the amount of wastewater and the organic load on the treatment system.
Just got one more question. I'm trying to get, from my previous question, trying to get a resolution or some indication from you, because the problem gets worse and there's no law, and this is subjective. So let's say instead of, 50 people here, there's 500 people, and every time someone comes out, this smells so bad, let's say, multiplies by the amount of increase that the biosolids increase, the problem gets worse and worse, and there's no science that says if everybody comes outside and throws up because it's so bad, well, that's because you smell, you're genetically predisposed to smell something. What's the sliding scale, and have we crossed it? Are we approaching it? Is there no sliding scale? It's completely subjective. It's odor. Because you can't, I know I'm not a lawyer either, but if I want to start a pigsty, I cannot do that because of the damage that it does to a bunny neighborhood. So, and the other kind of adjunct question to that is, I think that there is a responsibility. I'm not saying that you're not. There's a responsibility to this neighborhood as neighbors to solve the problem, not because, and justification is, well, we're taking care of all sorts of other problems, and this just happens to be a result of it. Then the problem has to be solved somewhere else, because if a whole pocket of the population is suffering, and going to continue to suffer.
Well, as I say, I'm not aware of any federal or state regulation that specifically sets a standard, a numerical standard for odor that's acceptable or not acceptable. But I think what you're doing here tonight is a great step. I mean, we are a neighbor, Ravenna Water and Sewer Authority, the Morse Creek Wastewater Treatment Plant, we're neighbors. And we want to be part of the communication, so we want to keep our communication. We want to communicate. We want to understand what's going on. We want to listen. And again, My goal, and I know my boss's goal, Tom Frederick, is that we want to look at it technically. We want to be able to offer options up the ladder, and then those options need to be considered from a third of standpoints.
Phil and Kevin, last two questions.
Yeah, just real quick, just on the technical side, you said that from your understanding of the process, that what would mainly be coming off of the compost would be volatile organics. What does that mean in terms of, in layman's terms, does that mean that, you know, within whatever, 50 feet, 90% of it would be dissipated into, you know, other compounds or whatever? And what does that mean in terms of what that...
Well, I don't actually have technical reports, but I think what the literature will show is the mixing is totally dependent on the meteorological conditions. So we talk about the reactions of different compounds, much like when you fry an egg in your kitchen. The dissipation of that odor is going to be dependent on the temperature of the air and the velocity of the air. And I think that's the real key here. And also relative humidity plays a very important part. So we've got three somewhat interlinked dependent parameters that go in to impact this issue.
Well, was it a mistake to put this plant in that particular location? I thought it was actually a good neighbor. I was just proud of the fact that it was there. It sort of guaranteed the diversity available life and things of that nature.
Well, some of you folks might not know, but there was an old treatment. The city of Charlottesville's primary plant was there, and I believe that was built in the 1950s. And when the federal funds came available in the mid-70s and late 70s, the federal government wanted to upgrade primary treatment plants that just removed solids and then still dumped the organics into secondary treatment. And they offered communities 75% federal funding to go forward and upgrade the primary plants to secondary plants. So the cities already had a facility there back in the 50s and 60s, and it was upgraded to the Morris Creek secondary plant in the early 80s.
In addition to the meteorological conditions, is there another factor, which is the amount of organic material, which is increasing?
I would think that'd probably be a logical conclusion, yeah.
Kevin?
Yeah. You asked the first part of my question, which was the composition of the smell, and would it be safe to say that what the type of the compound that people find objectionable is probably some type of sulfur compound, right?
No.
Or is it not?
It doesn't smell like it. And you would smell that.
It doesn't smell like rotten egg, it smells like sewage.
And
I guess there are maybe a better way of asking the question is, has there been any attempt to identify what it is in the volatile compounds that people find objectionable? And even if you don't measure smell, if you were an incinerator or any kind of chemical process plant, there is limits to what you can put in terms of total hydrocarbons in the air or sulfur dioxide.
That's absolutely true.
And also, to answer your question, the next quote, the urban area of the county is growing at about 2% a year. Charlottesville's been about steady. We're developing more, but our housing size has increased. So, I guess factored in, you got about 1%.
To talk about the chemistry of it, I don't have any data for specific compounds, but in wastewater, generally if it's without oxygen, if you have wastewater in a jar and if you sit it at 70 degrees for 5 days, it'll go what we call anoxic. It'll go become devoid of oxygen. And what happens is you have bacteria in that wastewater, and they form hydrogen sulfide. And so that's some of those, or what we also call mercaptan compounds, which are also sulfur-containing compounds. And that's generally the smell that people correlate to wastewater. The one thing with compost is that it's a biologic biological aerobic process. We're actually using bacteria to oxidize the biosolids, and also to we're using temperature to kill the pathogens. What we actually do is in the piles, we pump air in to keep it aerated at all times. And that's one of our goals, because if you don't keep the piles aerated, you have the possibility of more odor generation. So the type of compounds that people are smelling, I don't have that analytical data, so I can't comment on that specifically.
Someone passed me, and I think it's a good question, and what's the follow-up and how will we hear about what happens and what the response?
Well, as I say, we're writing a briefing paper for the Ravana board. We hope to have that presented in the board packet on March 27th. Anyone in this room is welcome to attend the Ravana board meeting. That's at 2 o'clock on Monday, March 27th. We're looking at technical issues, and we're also, I want to assure you, we're looking at operational techniques on how we operate that plant and how we operate that compost facility to make sure we're operating it using best practices. And so if there's anything we can do to the best of our ability, we're doing it.
Do you have a website?
We do.
Here on the website?
Yes, at everything, yes.
Okay.
Yep. Ravana.org, www.ravana.org. That will be in the administration building at the Morse Creek Wastewater Treatment Plant on the second floor in the conference room. 2 o'clock, Monday on the 27th.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and thank you again.
For the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, I'm Dan Daniels.